evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 5th, 2019. President Salva Kiir says the next government will be inclusive.
In the coming few months, I will form the government, a unity government which will bring together all the political parties in South Sudan and those who fought us, including those who are still outside.
And South Sudan police detain boat operators involved in a deadly collision this week.
There was a boat that was to be sent to go to the area where the incident occurred to check the area if there will be any trace of the disease or anything that will be of help to the investigation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says he believes the parties to the revitalized peace deal will form a transitional government of national unity in November. Mr. Kiir is calling on the South Sudan Army to avoid war rhetoric and speak the language of peace as the parties prepare to form a transitional government of national unity. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir made the remarks at Juba's Belfer military headquarters today while awarding medals to hundreds of military generals for their contribution to the country. Speaking in Arabic, the president insisted that the new government will be inclusive and will accommodate all those who are in the opposition.
In the coming few months, I will form the government, a unity government which will bring together all the political parties in South Sudan and those who fought us, including those who are still outside. We will bring everybody in this government.
Yesterday, opposition generals in Juba accused the government of not sending their troops to the barracks and increasing the number of soldiers stationed around the capital. The opposition generals also accused the government of setting up many roadblocks, especially at night, something they say frightens residents. President Kiir is urging his generals to stop making war rhetoric, but instead speak the language of peace so that the suffering of the South Sudanese people can end.
All of you, let us not talk about war again.
All of you, let us not talk about war again. Let us talk about peace, and we will preach about it everywhere we go. Because war can destroy the nation, as we have seen in the last few years. We were fighting among ourselves. So those who want to rebel, what is it for?
The South Sudan government and the opposition have agreed to establish a transitional government by the November deadline. A government expected to run for a period of 3 years. Mr. Kiir says after that, the South Sudanese people will have the opportunity to choose their next president in a democratic nationwide election in 2022.
We will all leave this to the people. They are the ones to elect people, whoever they want to come and lead them, but not us to hold our guns and say, I am the president. We don't want this to happen again. The SPLM-IO are with us here in Juba, and it is a positive development for them to come here in Juba so that we work together to implement the peace agreement.
At today's event, President Kiir awarded medals to more than 800 generals, including those who served in the Anyanya One movement, the first South Sudanese rebel group that took up arms against Khartoum, which started with the Tuareg Mutiny of August 18, 1955, and ended in 1972 when the rebels signed a peace agreement with the Khartoum government in Addis Ababa. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei State, where 9 people are confirmed dead and several others injured after 2 boats collided on the River Nile on Tuesday night between Juba and Bor. One of the boats sank. The police have detained the boat operators, as we hear from Manyang David Mayar.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atonkwol Manyang says the boat that departed from Juba was carrying 75 people, including women and children. Kwol says police are questioning the two boat operators to try to find out why the boats collided.
The people who are driving or sailing, if you may say, they are still under the police custody, and investigation is still ongoing as we speak at the moment. Earlier on today, there was a boat that was to be sent to go to the area where the incident occurred to check the area if there will be any trace of the deceased or anything that will be of help to the investigation. The witnesses will go there to show these people the exact location.
Kwol said Wednesday, one person was still missing, but that more than 60 people were rescued.
In the boat, there were a total of 75, and out of the 75, 10 people are dead, assumed to be dead because 9 bodies were recovered, and one is not yet found. And among them are women and children as well, among the deceased people. 65 people, 2 are injured. It's a sad day for the people of Jonglei State, for the government of Jonglei State, to lose such a number of people in a day in a situation that could have been avoided.
Anyang Nul, an eyewitness who was traveling on one of the boats, said the boat from Juba was traveling to Bor, while the other was headed from Bor to Juba. Speaking in Dinka, Nul says the passenger boats collided at Maburije, near the border between Terkeka and Jonglei States. Speaking in Dinka, Nol was trembling as he described what happened at about 11 o'clock Tuesday night.
Najuja tadatum Mangala kuwa romping in bonu bone kijel boren.
After leaving Mangala, we arrived at a place called Maburije. Soon we met with another boat coming from Bor. This boat from Bor came straight to us. The captain of the boat I was in tried to turn to allow the other boat pass. But within a short time, our boat was hit on the other side of the engine. Water started entering into the boat. Our boat started to sink. And then we heard someone calling, shouting that one of the boat is sinking. Immediately, I jumped together with other people. Soon, the boat I was in disappeared under the water. And I could see people struggling on water, screaming and crying.
Nul says about 20 people managed to escape by jumping onto the second boat, but some were unable to jump and fall into the water. He says most of the passengers were asleep when the collision happened. Last month, the Bor Municipal Council issued an order banning all boats operators from traveling at night between Bor and Minkaman. The council said the change was made to avoid accidents like the one that occurred last night. Kwol says those who defied the council's order will be punished severely. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Bor.
From Bor, we move back to Juba. 1 year after the signing of the revitalized peace deal, millions of South Sudanese remain displaced as the country continues to face humanitarian crisis. That's according to a new report published on Wednesday. A protection specialist at the Norwegian Refugee Council says people returning from neighboring countries often find themselves in more difficult conditions, some without a place to live. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
The report, entitled No Simple Solutions, Women, Displacement and Durable Solutions in South Sudan, was co-authored by 6 international and local aid agencies, Oxfam, CARE International, the Danish Refugee Council, Titi Foundation, Nile Hope, and the Norwegian Refugee Council. Roughly 80% of refugee families are headed by women, according to Connelly Butterfield, a protection and gender specialist at the Norwegian Refugee Council in South Sudan. She says the team talked to dozens of women in the UN-run protection of civilian sites, in the host communities, and women returning from refugee in Jonglei, Unity, Western Barghazal, Upper Nile, Eastern Equatoria, and Central Equatoria.
Women were speaking of gender-based violence. They were speaking about difficulties in accessing land tenure, difficulties in owning property. They were speaking about problems in accessing services, and that as women, they don't feel as engaged in peace processes. They don't feel like they have enough information to make good decisions for their family.
Butterfield says refugees are not sure if they should return or stay in the camps. They wonder if they will have a safe place to live once they return home, if they will have enough to eat, and they wonder if the peace deal will hold.
People come back because of rumor, or as I said, because they no longer felt like they could stay where they were. So then when they return, maybe they're not coming back to their original home. Maybe they're coming back to another area of displacement. So we say they've returned, but they're still in an IDP camp, or they're still living in the bush.
Butterfield says some refugees return home only to find that their houses and property have been either completely destroyed or are occupied by strangers, oftentimes soldiers. She says aid agencies are working to improve access to basic needs, including water, sanitation, shelter, and access to justice. Butterfield says while some communities are safe for people to return, others are not.
We shouldn't rush to bring people back. We have to acknowledge that people are facing a lot of challenges and focus on creating environments that are safe for all people in South Sudan.
Butterfield urges the government and other humanitarian agencies to focus on the needs of women and girls, considering what she describes as the country's harmful gender norms. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Peace, hope, and reconciliation were the three main pillars of Pope Francis' message today as he made his first papal visit to Mozambique. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Maputo.
Sunny Mozambique gave a warm and colorful welcome to Pope Francis as he toured the capital Thursday and spoke to lawmakers, youth, and clergy. Thousands of young Catholics packed to Maputo Stadium to hear him speak of hope, peace, and reconciliation to a nation that, for decades, has struggled with conflict. He was greeted Wednesday night by President Filipe Nyusi, who is running for re-election in October in a contentious poll in which rival parties have already begun heavy mudslinging at each other. But the pontiff did not pander to Mozambique's leadership when pointing out their higher responsibility to honor a recent peace deal. Both sides in the peace talks have recently accused the other of violating the fragile deal signed in August. As we know, he says, peace is not merely absence of war, but a tireless commitment, especially on the part of those of us charged with greater responsibility, to recognize, protect, and concretely restore the dignity, so often overlooked or ignored, of our brothers and sisters, so that they can see themselves as the principal protagonists of the destiny of their nation. And papal visits always come with plenty of pomp. He was greeted Thursday with dancing, music, red carpets, bands, and even some plentifully plumed peacocks at the presidential palace. But those who came to hear him say they took a deep message from his words. 34-year-old civil society campaigner Brenda Campos says she took to heart his entreaties for Mozambicans to look beyond their differences.
His key message was that diversity is important, that you need to be united, even though we have diversity in our country. It doesn't matter. We have to be united if you want to reconcile, if you want peace, if you want to build a better Mozambique.
And seminarian De Klerk Nazare, who is 24, says the pontiff gave him a lot of material on which to reflect, spiritually and academically. But, he said, on this colorful, triumphant day, it all came down to one thing. Everyone is happy with the visit of the Holy Father in Mozambique, he says. The Pope will leave for Madagascar on Friday, and from there to Mauritius. But the faithful say his message of peace and tolerance will be with Mozambique for a long time to come. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at xenophobic attacks in South Africa. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you prefer a big or small family? Why or why not?
Well, I prefer having a small family. Reason being, having a small family, it is better because financially you can manage that family and you can raise your children up to a certain level of education that you may want them to achieve.
A big family, in the sense that everyone has somebody to talk to or there's happiness at home.
I prefer a small family because then it allows you to connect with each other more.
I prefer moderate because with a moderate family, a bond is created in such a way that even if you're so far away, you can easily reach and reconnect at every given time.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Botswana government has issued a travel warning to its citizens over attacks on foreigners in South Africa. The attacks are likely to affect Botswana, which is dependent on its neighbor for food imports and petroleum products. Mkundisi Dube reports from Gaborone.
Paul Kitumetsi is a cross-border trader who buys second-hand clothes in South Africa's Johannesburg for resale in her home country, Botswana. But her business has come to a standstill since attacks targeting foreign nationals in South Africa broke out last week. Kitumetsi has been forced to stay home until the situation improves.
The attacks in South Africa are really bad for business. They're affecting us all because as neighboring countries, we do business together. Ever since these attacks started, I haven't been able to deliver on my business because I buy my stock from South Africa. Now you can imagine, everything has been put on hold for how long? I don't know.
While Botswana immigration officials say it has been business as usual at entry points, tax operators are not taking chances with some, like Mombati Kobe, grounding their fleet. Kobe argues it is too risky to drive to Johannesburg, where most of the attacks have occurred.
This unrest in South Africa has really affected our businesses because it's now difficult for us to take our vehicles there because you never know, they might burn them. And Some of our services, they are not insured. So for now, we have grounded our services until the situation calms down.
Botswana imports 2/3 of its goods from South Africa, which includes petroleum products. While the country has allayed fears of looming fuel shortages, fuel truck drivers are not prepared to risk their lives by crossing into South Africa. Albert Piri, a Zambian truck driver who works for a South African fuel company, has been stuck in Botswana since the start of the week, afraid of driving back to Johannesburg.
Our trucks are grounded. I've been at the border since the start of the week. We can't cross for fear of violence. I don't even know when I'll cross to South Africa. I fear for my life. But at the same time, I still want to keep my job.
Gaborone-based political analyst Lawrence Wogeditse says all affected countries should voice their concerns to the South African government and bring back their emissaries if necessary.
In the event that the South Africans are not responding adequately, then they need to immediately consider all options. And all options include recalling their envoys or their ambassadors.
While Botswana issued a warning to its citizens about traveling to South Africa, the country's president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, flew to Cape Town on Tuesday for the World Economic Forum on Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo, Malawi, and Rwanda leaders have pulled out of the meeting amid concerns of the deteriorating situation. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
We now turn to Cameroon, where the government is dispatching more than 1,000 troops to help bring peace to its troubled neighbors, the Central African Republic. The troops are leaving, as analysts say they are already stretched in handling such internal crises, such as piracy in the Gulf of Guinea, the Boko Haram insurgents, and the separatist crisis that has left at least 3,000 dead in 3 years. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
These are cattle ranchers and farmers from villages around the northern Cameroon town of Miganga. Their song says that if nothing is done to save them from Chinese miners, famine may strike their locality in a not too distant future. Their spokesperson is 54-year-old cattle rancher Mamoudou Poro.
C'est chinois qui nous font dur. On ne peut pas faire l'agriculture là où les gens.
He says the miners destroy farms and do not even care to cover holes and trenches they dig on roads and cattle ranches before leaving. He says they want the Chinese to build the roads they destroyed and fill the trenches they dug, give them electricity and at least a school and a market before leaving. Until 2014, Maganga and surrounding villages cultivated maize, beans, groundnuts, and producing cattle for markets in Cameroon, Nigeria, and the Central African Republic. Then, some 300 new mining sites producing gold, zinc, nickel, and other materials were discovered in the region. Among the explorers were Chinese companies. More than 100 of the company's miners work in and around Miganga. They use caterpillar tractors and equipment that clean stones and sift soil, allowing them to detect gold faster than locals who use manual tools. Locals are paid about $2 per day to work at the Chinese mining sites. Cameroon's Minister of Mines, Gabriel Dododoke, says the complaints of the villagers are legitimate. He says he has asked the companies to respect the terms of their contract with the government.
Les populations riveraines n'en bénéficient pas encore tel qu'on pourrait attendre.
He says the population suffers as a result of environmental degradation and does not benefit as expected because their mineral resources are exploited in a disorganized manner. He says he has given instructions to all exploitation companies to make sure they respect environmental laws and stop destroying farms and cattle ranches, which for now are the only sources of living for the people of the area. Officials with the Chinese mining company in Maganga declined to be interviewed about the allegations. However, company official Hu Long said the firm has assisted communities by providing aid to hospitals and building or refurbishing schools when solicited. He says the company also employs about 100 youths. This is not the first time Cameroonian villagers have protested alleged exploitation by the Chinese. In 2016, residents of eastern Cameroon had conflicts with small-scale Chinese gold miners who had been there for 6 years. The local miners said the Chinese had taken away their livelihoods and were not living up to promises to develop the area. Cameroon has not officially announced how much it gains from the mining business, but says it contributes a significant amount to the country's GDP. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Maganga, Northern Cameroon.
From Maganga in Northern Cameroon, we now go to Kigali, where Africa's three richest men have more wealth than the poorest 650 million people across the continent. That's according to a new report by Oxfam. Delegates to the Commonwealth Association of Polytechnics in Africa say the key towards shared development is promoting technical and vocational education. Eugene Uimana has more from Kigali.
The report is called A Tale of Two Continents and shows that Africa is rapidly becoming the global epicenter of extreme poverty. While the number of people living on less than $1.90 a day has plummeted, in Asia, the number in Africa is rising. The World Bank estimates that 87% of the world's extreme poor will be in Africa by 2030 if current trends continue. Experts and leaders on the continent say the solution may be to equip youth with technical and vocational education and training TVET skills. This is confirmed by the youth who are in workshops in different corners of the country. 23-year-old Nzaisenga Pascal is a welder in Rwanda. He joined the Ruhuha Vocational Education and Training Center when he was in the third year of secondary school. He says, I wouldn't be working if I have not joined technical and vocational education. He says many who were his classmates are jobless. They are very poor, but this career feeds me and my entire family, he says. However, Pascal's courage and hope shrink when he thinks of his materials, which he calls insufficient. Says materials are very expensive. To have mine, it requires at least 300,000 Gwandan francs. These are not mine. I work for someone. I can get $4 a day. So, according to educators, challenges that youth like Pascal face are due to insufficient investment in TVET schools by African governments. Dr. Edwin Tolno is the principal of Rift Valley Technical Institute in Kenya.
The other problem that has been there is the governments, in various governments in Africa, have not been giving attention to TVET, so that the funding has been skewed towards universities and primary education, so that TVET was left out. So those are some of the issues that we think we need to tackle as government.
Youth who get chances to study technical and practical skills say it is very difficult for them to get jobs because big companies sweep all tenders. Jaufa is the Secretary General of the Commonwealth Association of Polytechnics in Africa, CAPA, says this problem needs to be urgently addressed if Africa wants to raise many billionaires.
We've realized that member institutions, member countries are doing things differently, and they are doing things individually. How do we put together our efforts? How do we share the facilities? How do we share the resources effectively? And how do we address the issue of youth for skill acquisition, but more importantly, for employability?
Wealth for the three richest billionaires in Africa is $28.8 billion. Aliko Dangote, $14.1 billion. Nikki Oppenheimer, $7.7 billion. And Johann Rupert, $7 billion, according to Forbes magazine's 2019 billionaires list. Economic experts warn that if youth are not equipped with vocational education and training skills to fund their own jobs in the continent's economy, they will always be struggling. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
That's our show for this Thursday. If you are in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, you can now hear us on Radio Sawa, 97.5 FM from 7 to 7.30 every evening, Sudan local time. We welcome on board all our listeners in Sudan. We now leave you with Mustafa Said Ahmed with a beautiful Sudanese melody. We've been listening to Mustafa Sid Ahmed with that beautiful Sudanese melody. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you making us part of your evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
شعري ليك مرجح من شعر الغمام لا قصدي ألقو معاك بكلمات غنى لا شعري ليك مرجح من شعر الغمام